Hi, this is Jason Stinson from Overcome, and you are listening to my chapter on As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man, being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it.
We've had a run of conversations with all the old tooth and nail hardcore frontmen lately, so I'm excited to have you join the podcast to talk about Overcome.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I listened to the Jeff Jackaway one and the Tin Man one, and I've listened to several others of yours throughout the year, you know, after years actually as well. So yeah, I'm excited to be on here.
That's cool. Yeah, I just realized this morning that Jared, who was in Indwelling and did some work with Overcome, was on an episode previously. I just realized that.
Yeah, he was just out here in Phoenix recently, so we had dinner together just like 2 weeks ago, so I still see him. We stay in good contact. He's a good dude.
Cool. So are you a lifelong Arizonian?
I am, yeah. I was actually born and raised here. I was born on an army base just south of Tucson, Arizona, called Fort Huachuca. And my parents were from Pennsylvania, but they moved me back there when my dad got out of the army for about 2 years when I was a baby. But then they really liked Arizona, and I've lived in kind of this little, what used to be a small town called Gilbert, Arizona, pretty much my entire life. And now it's this, you know, massive place that just keeps growing and growing like anywhere else. But I've pretty much found my place here, and I think, you know, God settled me here years ago, and it's just where I've been.
Yeah, that's cool. What got you into music?
It's interesting. It's like I grew up in a pretty much non-musical family as far as my parents are concerned. It's weird. Like when I was a kid, just like a little kid, I was like super into music for whatever reason. I remember like even like Michael Jackson commercials for Pepsi or whatever being online, and I would sit and watch TV forever just to catch that commercial. Or I was always totally like intrigued by anything music related, and I would hear songs on the radio or in different places when I was a kid, and these songs would just stick in my head, and I would just love them, and I would try to find a way to listen to them or whatever, but there wasn't any internet or any way of just kind of like picking songs out and streaming them. And I don't know, I grew up loving music, so anytime I could get a hold of any type of tape or cassette or things that I heard, or on the way to school and kids would play music on the bus, like I would just totally get attached to it, and I would kind of like act out being able to play instruments and all these different things. And it just was something that, you know, when other kids were interested in sports or whatever it was, like I always just had this kind of deep-rooted desire to listen to music and to watch music and to, you know, seek any way I could. I would like, when I was like really young, I had an uncle that was in this metal band called Crystal Ball, and he had this drum set in his room, and for whatever reason we were moving around a lot, and I had to, we were staying at their house, and he had this, like, I would, like, sneak in his room when he was gone. He's probably going to listen, so he's going to be, what? But I was sneaking in his room, and I would just, like, look at this drum set in there. And it just blew my mind. I'm like, oh, man, it was so awesome. And then he had, like, this cabinet full of, like, records. And I was, like, I was probably, like, in fourth grade, whatever age that is, you know. And I was, like, 10 years old or whatever. And I would pull out all these records. It was all, like, these old, it was, like, you know, Night Ranger and Rat Records and you know, I don't know, every single old metal record, lots of Ozzy Osbourne stuff and Kiss records, and I remember Molly Hatchet records, and they would have all these, like, just, like, these album covers, you know, and then you'd flip it around, and you'd always have, like, the picture of the band, you know, somehow, and you'd just look at these guys, and it's like, what in the world? It was, like, real-life, you know, real-life, like, characters, you know, these things, like, you know, some people, like, play stuff in movies or whatever, but then, and the role is gone,
yeah.
But these are, like, real people. They were making, like, real music, and they really looked like that. And this is, like, who they were. And it's like, it wasn't like a comic book or something. And this is who these people were. And it was, like, just kind of blew my mind. Yeah, I remember seeing, like, the Twisted Sister record. And I know there's some obviously, some acting in that. But it's, like, but these guys, like, went out all the time looking like this and acting like that and singing these songs and kind of became, like, who they were. And it was just real intriguing to me. So, I don't know, from my youngest memories all the way up through high school, I was just always, always, always looking for new music, and it was just completely not something I could ever satisfy in my life.
That's cool. Did you start playing guitar at a young age?
Yeah, you know what, I started actually later than you would think. I always wanted to play an instrument as a kid, and I kind of went back and forth. I remember being like a really young kid, like listening to like Huey Lewis and the News and stuff like that. And those songs are like real popular on the radio, and thinking, man, I want to play the saxophone, you know, or whatever, whatever was the kind of the cool instrument at the time. And I never got any lessons or nothing. Like, I remember talking to my parents several times, but I want to do this, or I want to learn this, but it never really panned out. And, it wasn't until I was 16 years old, actually, I was in high school and I had some friends that were playing guitar, and they were, you know, at that point it was like, you just got to learn every Metallica song, you know, and every Slayer song or whatever. And it was like, they would sit and we'd be at school and they would bring their guitars to the school and they'd, you know, keep them in the orchestra room or whatever. And then during our lunches and breaks, we'd all go outside and they'd have these electric guitars and they weren't plugged in, but they would sit there and like riff out all these songs that we loved, you know, and they'd be working on these things and showing each other. But I didn't have a guitar and I was like, man, this is what I want to do. You know, this was like, I was blown away by that. So I was like, Mom, Dad, I have to play guitar. So I skipped the whole, like, acoustic guitar thing. They bought me, like, this, you know, Yamaha white pearl, like, colored electric guitar, and I started taking guitar lessons. And it was an interesting thing. You couldn't have given me any other thing or bought me any other thing at that point in my life. That was, like, the pinnacle thing. I mean, I loved that guitar. I would open up the case, and I'd just stare at it, you know, and, like, hold it in my hands. Like, I just loved the way the strings felt. I loved the way it smelled. I loved everything about it. And so I started taking lessons, and it was like, you know, we were going through some Hal Leonard book, and it was teaching me, like, Ode to Joy and all this stuff, and I'm just like, this is not cutting it at all. And I remember just kind of telling the teacher, like, you know, we're paying you for this. You know, I want to learn what I want to learn. And he's like, okay, fine. What do you want to learn? So I started telling him. He kind of gave me the basics of, I skipped all the note stuff and all learning how to read music and all that junk. And he taught me of a bar chord, like a power chord, you know?
Exactly.
And that was it. I went through maybe like four or five songs with him, and I just quit. And I locked myself in my room, and I just remember, like, I heard in a power chord, as I moved it up and down the neck, like, all of the songs that I was listening to. Like, everything that I was hearing at that time, I was like, whoa, like, all the punk stuff I was listening to and the metal stuff I was listening to, you know, with my little amp and my Metal Zone pedal, making a power chord, I was like, I hear every one of those songs. I just got to know where these are in relation to each other, you know, on the neck. And so I just started picking out songs on my own, and between that and my friends, you know, I picked it up really quickly, and within like maybe a year I was riffing pretty hard.
That's cool. Did you start playing in bands at that time then?
You know, I my first band, yeah, was I was maybe 17 years old, and it wasn't really a band. It was a friend of mine. He's passed now, and a really good dude. He was this amazing guitar player. His name was Bubba, and or Bubber, actually, everybody called him. His real name was Larry. But I met this guy through some friends at church at the time, and he would come and bring his guitar to church, and he would just rip it up. He would play like Crazy Train from Ozzy Osbourne, but he would do the guitar solos and all this stuff, and I was just like, what? And I would play rhythm with him, and he's like, dude, you got some good rhythm. We should get together and jam. And so I had my own car at the time, and we would all meet different random places sometimes with friends that he knew that had drum sets or this or that. And it never really, you know, we would all just kind of get together and make noise, you know, the way you do, and you try your best to get through like the minute and a half of whatever song you knew. But I remember one time he put together, there's something he was doing for some talent thing at a church, and he put together like 6 songs with some drummer, and he gave me this cassette tape of all these cover songs, and some of them were like these versions of like Kiss songs, and like they're kind of like, they were like all these like kind of metal, old metal tunes, but they changed the lyrics to them, like whoever was singing. And I learned all these songs, and we got together and we practiced it, and we were all like, it was like good. You know, we had a bass player and a drummer and everything. And I remember going and playing this, like, I don't even remember what it was, but there's all these, it was like a youth group thing. And we're up there playing, like, you know, Kiss songs and whatnot with like Christian lyrics. I don't think anybody taught it, but that was like my first band experience. And then after that, I was like, I'm leaving this because this is kind of goofy. And I felt weird the whole time, but it was stoked because I was playing. But I was like, I want to put my own band together, like for real. And so kind of at the time, I was skateboarding a lot. I did a lot of skating for like, I don't know, probably about 9 years of my life. And I had some friends that were skating with us, and they all kind of, you know, some played a little bass, some played a little guitar. I had another friend that I hung out with all the time that, you know, didn't know what he wanted to do, but when we started talking about it, we were talking, well, we need a drummer, and this was Ryan Hayes at the time, which became the drummer for Overcome, and then this was Reggie Shumway, and he was skating with us, and so it was just kind of weird. He was like, okay, I'm going to go buy a drum set. So his mom took him to this local music store and bought him this new red Pearl Export Pro drum set. And we all just kind of like set up in his garage one day, and we were just playing through, you know, songs that we knew. And I'm like, I'm going to try writing songs. And that's kind of how the whole thing just kind of got started. So I think the Overcome kind of got started. It was kind of like really my first band. Not my first band experience necessarily, but my first band thing to happen. Like, it kind of started around 93-ish or so, somewhere in there. I was just kind of finishing high school.
Well, that's cool. What led you to fronting Overcome and taking over that role?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, you know. Growing up, like all through most of high school, I got really into metal. A lot of, like, when I was really young, I was into like all the hair bands and all the stuff. And then it just kept getting heavier and heavier. And then I remember when I first heard Master of Puppets, like from Metallica, it just blew my mind. I listened to that against my parents' wishes, like nonstop. I mean, nonstop. And then when Injustice for All came out, that just blew my mind too. And there was, you know, there's a few other bands at the time, but Metallica was kind of like it. And so I was super into metal, and I was looking up other things, and I would go to this record store called Rockaway Records where you could kind of go through the records and you could listen to everything. So I would try to figure out what I liked, and everything in me was like, I'm a guitar player. I never even thought, because all these guys that they sang, they all kind of, they were singers, you know, except for maybe like some of the brass stuff, but it just never even hit me that I would ever sing until maybe my junior year. That's where I kind of got into, I heard hardcore for the first time. This dude had moved out from California, and he was kind of like what my first exposure to like what like a hardcore kid was. He moved out here. I ran into him skateboarding in the back of a grocery store, and he had this shaved head, and he was wearing, you know, this uniform choice t-shirt, and he kind of looked like a skinhead and stuff, but he was really cool, and we hung out, and we were just talking. We went back to his where he was living at the time, this apartment. I remember we were just talking about music. He was telling me all about all this stuff that I never heard of before, like all this New York City hardcore stuff, like Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits and, I don't know, just so many different bands, and sick of it all and all this hardcore stuff. And so I was like looking at all these records. I was like, I've never, and he's putting it on. And it was like this kind of weird combination of, you know, punk and metal, you know? And it's kind of where I was. Like, in my head, I was always like this combination. Like, I would listen to, like, really punk stuff, and then I would listen to a lot of metal stuff. And I always liked it when Metallica would kind of do, like, Misfits songs and things like that. And that was kind of, like, always my favorite thing. And I was like, whoa, this is, like, everything in music that I could ever imagine I would want. Like, this kind of punk metal mixture. And I didn't know what it was, but I just started, like, that's whenever I, like, just got so involved with that. And the main thing about that stuff that I liked wasn't any more, like, the guitars or the drums or any of that, because that stuff wasn't really, like, the focus in those bands. It was the singers. You know, you had these over-the-top, like, voices, and these guys that were, like, you know, you would see the stickers and the album covers, and it'd always be, like, this front man up front with his finger pointing in the air, you know, all ripped and, you know, just pointing and so intense in his face, and it had the whole crowd is like up in front yelling with this guy. And I remember thinking, like, that is the coolest thing that could ever exist, you know? So I was like, I don't know how you get that, but I want that. So over the years, you know, this is kind of like how this started. All these guys, I was getting them into hardcore, and there was, like, no hardcore scene in Arizona at all, but I was listening to all this music, and all my friends were listening to all this music, and we were all super into it, and we were all just kind of like, you know, you'd hold microphones, you know, and, like, kind of look your coolest, hold the microphone, and you'd wrap the cord around your hand and all that junk. But I just started writing songs on guitar, and I hadn't even at that point thought that I would ever be, you know, a singer necessarily, but I was writing these songs, and I was kind of, there was nobody else to do it, so I was kind of writing some words to it too, and we would learn the song as a band, and then I would, you know, I would be like, okay, we don't have anybody to sing it, and, you know, we need to find a singer, but you know, I'm going to not play guitar, you guys just play it, and I'm going to sing, I'm just going to yell these words and kind of see how it can flesh out. And then we can record it, and then when we find a singer, we can give it to them, and so they can see how the structure is already and everything. It's kind of the way my mind works. When I write songs, I like to write them from beginning to end, and I know how I want everything to go. So, anyways, we would do this, and we would record these songs in the garage, and then I would stop, and we'd listen back to them. And we started listening to these songs, and after about, like, maybe, I don't know, like a week of doing this, and we would practice, like, every day. I mean, we were consumed with this. I mean, we would just write and play and jam, and all our friends would come over, and they'd all be hanging out in the garage, and it'd be loud as crap in there, and we would just be playing, and I'd be yelling and screaming. And it wasn't too long. I mean, we were all young and goofy, so it wasn't too long until all of my friends knew these songs. And then they were in the garage yelling and screaming back with me. And we were, like, having these, like, little hardcore shows in the garage. And so we're listening back to this stuff. And I'm like, and all the guys, and everybody was like, you don't need a singer. You're the singer. Like, it works. Like your voice is good. And it's hardcore. And we all love it. Like, I can't imagine that this would ever sound any different or that it could sound any better. Like, you should just be the singer. And that was kind of like, that affirmation for me at that point was kind of like, yeah, I'm going to be the singer, you know what I mean? And I just remember being, like, so stoked about that. And that's more or less how I just became the singer. It was more out of just, like, a necessity for one and me being willing to and kind of having that desire to do so anyways.
So if there was no scene, like, hardcore scene in Phoenix or that area at the time, how did you guys get hooked up with, like, the hardcore scene and maybe more specifically the Christian scene, as it were? Because I think the first release Overcome did was Prepared for War, the split with No Innocent Victim, right?
I believe so, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think the very first thing we ever did really might have been our demo cassette that we made. And then yeah. I think people might have taken songs from that and put them in certain things. But it's all kind of, some of that stuff's a blur to me at this
sure.
point.
But,
sure. yeah, you know, it's in Arizona, I shouldn't say there was no hardcore thing, because there was some stuff, and that's where I was seeking this stuff out, like, does this exist in Arizona, and where, and how can I be a part of this scene? And in Tucson, there was a band called Groundwork, which was, like, one of my favorite, and still is one of my favorite bands ever, and they were around, and there was a couple Arizona bands. There was a band called Stand to Reason that played out here, and I got to know the dudes in that band, and we would talk, and I would hang out at their house, and this guy had kind of, like, been a part of the Arizona hardcore scene, like, longer than I had. His name was Jesse, and so he, you know, would tell me these stories about Youth of Today, like, coming to California and coming to Arizona one time and playing, like, this little warehouse in Phoenix, and that kind of stuff just, like, blew my mind. And so, actually, like, when we first started jamming, like, or first, you know, those first kind of, like, those times in the garage as a band, like, we were playing, like, old Outspoken songs and Unbroken songs to get us started, and some old, other old school, like, but more of the, what was kind of newer, new age stuff coming out of New Age Records, California stuff, that's what we were kind of playing in the garage. And, like, we were playing stuff from, like, Groundwork and all this stuff, and so there was kind of a scene. It was just super small. I remember we all went, because Unbroken and Strife and Mean Season all came to Phoenix. And that was like, what is happening? You know, I remember seeing this flyer show up, because, again, there was no, like, Facebook or anything. In a record store, mm-hmm. we were all just kind of, like, just getting into these bands. I was, like, mail-order catalogs and whatever to get records. And I remember seeing this. We all went to this warehouse in Phoenix, and they played in just on the floor in, like, this warehouse, and it just totally blew my mind. And so that was everything I wanted. And I had honestly, like, never even really heard. I was a Christian at the time. I grew up in the church. The kids that we were kind of playing with this, they were all kind of churchy-ish type kids, you know what I mean? They were all kind of kids that, like, came from, except for maybe our drummer. But I used to take him to church with me all the time, and we would, you know, he was kind of with me and everything. And it wasn't until, you know, when we started, like, we weren't a Christian band. Like, we had our first couple songs where, like, we were just kind of like this kind of hardcore, quasi, straight edge-ish type band, you know? And we were just a hardcore mm-hmm. band. And I don't think we had necessarily any direction to it. But I had a friend that was here that was really into, that lived here, that we kind of got into hardcore together. And he moved to California. And I would talk to him on the phone, and he would tell me about this vibrant hardcore scene that was in California. And I would just blues go, I'm going to shows, like, every night. And I'm seeing, like, Strife and Course of Disapproval and, you know, Unbroken and Mean Season and all these things. He would just name, and I'm going to this show, and then I'm going to this show, and I'm going to this show, and I'm going to this show. And I'm just being like, what the heck? What am I doing here in Phoenix, you know? And just being, like, super jealous of this life that he was, like, living in this hardcore scene. And, but, you know, we were kind of restricted to phone calls and stuff at that time. It wasn't, you know, texting or sending pictures to each other or any of that type of stuff. So, and it was expensive, so we didn't talk that much. And we were dudes, so it's not like we're, you know, needed to spend hours on the phone talking to each other or anything. So, you know, we would talk, like, every 6 months or so. And this was about for a year. And, you know, Overcome was kind of like getting started, and we probably had, I don't know, three or four tunes, and the lyrics were just kind of like more like this positive edge type stuff or whatever, you know. And he came back to Arizona one time visiting, because his parents still live here, and he had a Focused t-shirt, and it was this band Focused, and he was a Christian at the time, and he was like, dude, when he got here, he's like, you got it. And Focused didn't have a record out or anything. He had no way to play me any of their music. But he had this t-shirt, and it had this big Bible verse on the back of it. It said Focused on it, and I loved that name. And he was telling me about this band that he saw at this show, and they were Christians. And they were called, calling themselves sort of Spirit-Filled Hardcore. And it was You know, and I was like, what? I've never even heard of that stuff. And he was just telling me all about it. And then he was like, yeah, and then I went to this show at this church, and there was, and he told me about, like, Unashamed and Focused, and, like, and he named off some other bands. I don't remember which ones at the time. But he started naming all this stuff, and that just totally, totally blew my mind. And then he was, like, telling me, like, yeah, well, this band Focused, I was like, I got to hear this. You know, like, you know, hardcore bands, because that didn't exist in any realm, shape, or form. You know, there was always kind of Christian metal bands and Christian punk bands and all that stuff, and I would listen to all that. I kind of listened to everything, but when he was telling me about this, it just seemed to make sense. Like, hey, I believe in God. Hardcore is all about what you're believing in. Why wouldn't I sing about what I really believe in and not something that, you know, is just kind of like a part of like this music or whatever. And it seemed like that was like the key for me, you know? And so he was like, well, you got to come to California. You got to get everybody and you got to come to California. And so we all kind of planned this big California trip. And what I didn't realize is in the meantime, Focus Record actually was coming out. And I was at this, I don't know what it was. I think it was like Heaven's Metal Magazine or something, you know? I was at this bookstore, and I got the new Heaven's Metal Magazine, and I was flipping through it. And this was like maybe only like a couple weeks later. And I see this ad for Focus Bow Record. And you see this picture of Tim Mann, you know, that the famous one, I think you used it too or whatever, with his finger up in the air. And you can kind of see the guitar player in the background. And he's, you know, he's singing. And, you know, it's just like all those pictures that I've seen of, like, all, like, the hardcore bands. And I was like, whoa, you know, this record. So I went to, like, the Christian bookstore, like, every day for, like, a month. Like, do you have this in? Do you have this in yet? Can you order this for me? I was ordering it from every store just to see who would get it first, you know? And I remember one day, like, a month before all my friends were going to California, like this record, like I got a phone call that this cassette tape that I wanted was in. And I was like, I like lost my mind and drove to this store and I got this cassette. And that was about cassette, you know? And I bought the CD too. I bought, you know, that was all they had. But I remember just buying them both and being like, I'm going to have both of these so I can listen to it in every capacity. Because back then my car just had a tape deck. But anyway, I remember putting this in and it started up, you know, and it's got that epic intro and everything, and then just to listening to this stuff and being like, this is my calling in life. This is what I'm supposed to do. And I remember going back to the band and being super excited about this record, and like, we would listen to it, and then all my friends would listen to it. And at this point, I was like kind of taking all my friends to church, and we were all like this huge crew of like church guys, and when we heard Focus, it was just blowing our minds. And so there was this message that we all kind of clung to and believed in. And then, you know, we heard this thing for the first time, and it was like everything. I mean, I didn't think like maybe musically it was the best thing as compared to like maybe like Unbroken or other bands like that. But it's like, I had other stuff that I liked maybe more musically, but like this message was like the thing, you know, that really sucked me in. So we went to California and we went to the show, and I don't remember who opened, but it was Focused playing. And me and all my friends, you know, we're from Arizona. There's no good hardcore shows. We walk into this place and it was loaded. I mean, absolutely loaded with kids. I mean, there's probably 200, which isn't even that much, but for me at the time, it was like, it could have been, you know, a stadium full. And it was like probably 200 to 300 kids in here. And you walk in and you hear this like music playing. And I'm like, what is this playing? And I've never heard it before, but they're singing about God and I can understand the words. And I was asking people like, what are they playing? And they're like, oh, this is this band called Unashamed and their record's coming out soon. And so they're playing it over the thing. And I was like, holy moly. And just being like, what is this crazy thing that I walked into? It was like walking into like heaven, you know, musical heaven for me. And I remember seeing like, you know, we're sitting there waiting. The first band that opened like wasn't a hardcore band. It was probably, I don't know, if you know, if I think back about it, it was probably some type of Tooth and Nail ish band or something I don't even remember who it was. They weren't hardcore, and I just, at the time, I just didn't even care. I was just kind of like talking to all these hardcore kids everywhere. I mean, there's all these kids, and every one of them's wearing these, you know, hardcore shirts. And there's just a sea of, like, people that looked like us and talked like us and were into the same type of music that we were. And it was just amazing. We were all just immersed in, like, what we were seeing. And then Focus kind of got up and they were setting up and I'm looking at them and I didn't know any of those guys. I didn't know what any of them looked like. I didn't know what any of them, you know, who did what. But I was just watching these guys set up. And I, at that point, and me and all my friends, like, we knew every single lyric. And so they started playing and we just overtook, like, the stage. Like, we were just up front, you know, just stealing the microphone and screaming at the top of our lungs. And all these kids are like, what the heck? And even Tim Mann was, like, really, 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 like, surprised by this. And he was just like, who are these youth crew kids from Arizona? You know? And so I started, you know, and I was screaming and yelling. And, like, we literally, like, the whole band was like, these kids are weird. You know what I mean? Like, and we were just like, you know, this was, like, our first, all of us. That was, like, our first real, like, I think that week, like, we went to another hardcore show. Which was like another really big, awesome show, like Chorus of Disapproval and Strife and some other bands. And that was also another mind-blowing experience. But this particular Focus show, just because of where we were and I think what God was doing in my life at the time, was just super exciting. And we talked to Tim afterwards, like forever. And I was just telling how much I loved his record and all this stuff. And he just started telling me about this huge hardcore Christian hardcore scene called Spirit-Filled Hardcore that existed in California. And I was like, well, dude, I got to get your number because I have a band and it's a Spirit-Filled Hardcore band. Like, at the time it wasn't, but I was like, that's it for me. It is now. You know what I mean? And so I was like, it's a Spirit-Filled Hardcore band. We're called Overcome and you got to hear it and all this stuff. He's like, oh, I'd love to, but and at that point, just because I think where the scene was and everything was so exciting, like everybody, as soon as anybody heard in the room that there was like another Spirit-Filled Hardcore band from Arizona, and then they, like, kids were just talking to us, well, tell us about your band, you know, and how many songs do you have, and you gotta come out here, you should come play, and da da da. And it was like this, like, whole door and whole world just opened up to me in like 1 minute, you know, and all of a sudden everybody was interested in what we were doing and everybody cared, and we didn't even exist. We had a name and like two songs, and none of it was like what I was telling people it was, you know, and like we didn't really even exist at the time, but all of a sudden there was like hundreds of people that were interested in it. And then the singer, you know, for Focused was like interested in it. And he was like, oh, I got to get your number and we need to talk. And I want to bring you guys out here as soon as possible. And so my driving home, I didn't even sleep, I don't think, for like 3 days. And like driving home, like all of us were just like, we got to go home and we got to start writing songs like crazy. And we got to be the most Spirit-filled, like, band that can ever exist. You know what I mean? Like, that was just our, we got to be the heaviest and the hardest and the, have the best Spirit-filled lyrics of ever, you know? And anyhow, I don't know. We were just this, we had like this, like, super excitement for music. So, that's really how the whole, like, Christian hardcore thing for us kind of started, was seeing that show. And we got back and I rewrote the lyrics, I rewrote my songs, I started writing songs, started like blowing out of us because we were so excited because we had like this thing to do, you know, we were like, we got to get to California. We got to get there and we got to play in front of these people. And so that's what we did. We just started, the next thing you knew, we had like, I don't know, 7 or 8 songs. And we were like, if we're going to California, we've got to be, these kids are going to want music, you know? I mean, this was a, such an amazing period of time because everybody, I mean, if you made a tape, it didn't matter what it was. I mean, every single person would buy it. Like, you couldn't, if you had t-shirts and you had music, like, the excitement for it all was so heavy that you couldn't go somewhere. And everybody would just ask, where's your music? Where's your music? Where's your music? Where's your music? I want it. I want it. I want it. I want it. You couldn't make enough of it, you know? So we made this demo tape. We wrote all these songs. We made this demo tape. We created this thing. We had it, and I remember calling Tim Mann and just talking to him, and be like, "Hey, we've got this tape. We got this demo tape. I want to send it to you." And he's like, "Well, I'm just going to put you on a show, and you're going to come out here and you're going to play." And you know, but then the crazy thing happened is even before you know, he's like, "I'm going to put you on a show," and I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "But you know, we're coming to Phoenix," and this again was like. You know, there's no word of mouth. There's no way to know anything unless you find a flyer somewhere or something. So I was like, "You are?" And he's like, "Yeah, we're going on tour, and it's going to be us and POD and the Blamed, and we're all coming to Phoenix. And so you guys should try to get on that show." And so we were like, "What the heck? This is crazy." So we find out the date, found out where it was, just through random things. I had no way of, like, knowing who was doing the show or any way of contacting anybody or anything. And so we didn't know what to do. So we all just kind of, like, showed up to this show, like, 2 hours early. And we're just waiting there, you know. And the promoter of the show kind of, whoever coming to unlock the doors or whatever. And I don't even think Focus and them were there yet, but we're just waiting. And we're like, "Yeah, we're this band from Arizona. And, like, we're all here to see Focus." And they're like, "Oh, yeah." And I remember, like, Focus showing up. And us all, like, meeting him, and he's like, "Oh, cool." And then him being like, "You guys, are you playing? Are you playing?" And I'm like, no, we're not. And he's like, "You should play." And I'm like, "Well, I don't." He's like, "Well, you just open the thing. Who cares? Just go, you know, you can use our gear or whatever." And I remember just thinking, like, my mind, like, exploding, you know? And he showed up to the show with, like, these Center Point cassettes and I think this band called Impact, and then he had the new Unashamed record, you know, all the stuff that wasn't even out yet on Tooth and Nail. And he was setting up this booth, and I just remember, like, just buying all this stuff. And then we weren't super far away, so we're like, "You know what, we're just going to go get our gear, and we'll come back." And the promoter was like, "Sure, yeah, just come back, and then you guys can open the show." And so that was kind of like we had played a couple other, like, random warehouse things and some different things that some friends had kind of set up for us that was just kind of us. But that was kind of like our first show. You know, it was us and the Blamed and POD and Focused in this, like, little church in Phoenix. And there was, like, nobody there. But we all went back, and we were freaking out. Like, "We're going to play this show. I can't believe it. They're going to get to see us play, you know." And I'm sure we were terrible, but we played. And, you know, Tim was like, "Oh, this is great. You know what I mean? You know, this is cool. I'm going to bring you guys out to California." And so we didn't have our demo done yet, but I was like, "We're going to get this done in time." And I just remember I don't even remember what the first show was. I remember going out there, and I remember it was Bloodshed and, you know, Focused and some other bands. And we played this show, and it was just, we got up and played, and everybody was just as excited for us as they were for everybody else. They just didn't know our words, you know? But it didn't matter. I mean, they were screaming stuff and kind of picking up on little lines and things like that, you know? And all my friends came, too. So all the Arizona crew was there, and they were, you know, singing the stuff. And it was just created this mass excitement. And we must have sold, you know, 200, 300 demo tapes. I had made, like, 2,000 of them. And that night, we sold probably, like, 300 of them. And it wasn't even like, it was just, and I put my phone number in that tape, on the tape. You used to do that back in the day. You'd, like, put your phone number on it for booking. And I kid you not, I must have got, like, 20 phone calls, like, a day. Like, just kids, like, "Hey, I listened to your demo. I love it. Just want to tell you I love it." And I used to have, like, this old answering machine that had a little cassette tape in it, you know? And I'd come home, and it would show, like, 17 messages. And I'd click play, and it would be, like, all these people just calling me, just random people calling and just telling me about this you know, how they like the demo, and then other people like, you need to, I'm booking this show and I'm doing this show. Can you guys come out here? And this, and I'm like, we must have had like all these show offers and stuff. So it got to the point where we were literally going to California like every weekend or every other weekend. We were just, we bought a van and we were just going to California. And that was just what we were doing. And at that point, you know, it was like really quick that, Tim called me and was like, hey, Tooth & Nail Records is doing this thing, this compilation of hardcore bands called Help Us Amongst Friends, and they want you to record a song for it. And they'll pay for it. They want you to go into a recording studio here in California. I'm going to set it up. And so we, that was like another mind-blowing experience for us. So we're like, oh, man, we're going to, you know, get this song on this Tooth & Nail thing, which at that point was like, in my head, it would have been best to be like on New Age Records or some type of other secular hardcore label. That was really always my goal. But I also didn't care. Like, I just wanted someone to put my record out, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so we did that song and, on there and that was just, it just totally took off. And that was kind of like how we got into like the whole spirit-filled hardcore thing. It was just the perfect, all the timing was perfect during that age, you know what I mean? During that, it was like everything was exciting. Nobody could hear enough, you know, good bands, and we were in close enough proximity to it to be able to kind of be a part of it. And at the same time, we were kind of exciting to the scene because we weren't a California band, you know? We were like this, and outside, yeah, there's this band from Arizona, you know? They were different, like, what comes out of Arizona, you know, other than dirt, you know? So it was kind of like that kind of mentality.
Yeah. What was being on Tooth & Nail Records like?
You know what? For me, it was great. Like I said, like, we really only wanted someone to put out a record. And I remember we were in California one time after the Help Us Amongst Friends thing came out, and we were going to play the show for the Help Us Amongst Friends release. And I remember Tim Mann, we went and we would always stay at his house. So we would go out there and we'd stay with him. And we were all like the lunch at In-N-Out Burger like the day of that show. And at that time, it was kind of like, if I remember right, it was obviously Brandon Ebel, but I'm pretty sure that Bill Power kind of had something to do with it at the time also. But I'm not 100% sure on that. I know he did, that might have been later, but I don't. All I remember is Tim being like, hey, this show, guys, you guys really need to, like, kill it because Brandon's going to be there. You know, he's going to be at the show because it's for his release, and you know, he wants to check out all these kind of other bands that were on it. And pretty much any band that was, like, kind of close to California or us, you know, that were on that Hunks Help Us Most Friend thing, we're going to play this big show, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we were like, wow. And I was like, do you think he'd sign us? You know? And he's like, well, I don't know. He's like, everything, there's a lot of bands that he hasn't signed. You know, there was, at that point, there was all these California bands playing, you know, and there was, and the only ones at the time that he had really picked up were Focused and Unashamed. That was pretty much it at the time. I think he was kind of working on Strong Arm, because when that song came out, it was just epic. It just was so much different than everything else on that compilation, and but other than that, I mean, there was those two bands, but there was probably, like, I don't know, there had to have been like 10 other Christian hard, like, spirit-filled hardcore bands in California that I'm sure, you know, were playing with everybody, playing with these guys more, and they were all friends, and they probably, most of them maybe even knew Brandon. So I kind of felt like our chances of that ever happening were really slim. And so I didn't really, you know, I kind of always had this hope that someone would put our record out there, like anybody really. It could be Tooth & Nail, it could be, you know, any of the other hardcore labels at the time. That was just my desire, that somebody would do it, you know, somebody, anybody. And at the time, the Tooth & Nail thing was super exciting because it was kind of a ticket to like this kind of new thing that was starting even in the Christian market, you know, even like the, it was like this label that was not like all the other kind of big Christian labels. And it seemed very independent, and it seemed very, you know, just band driven rather than like production driven or any of that kind of stuff. So I remember thinking that would be cool too. And anyhow, we played this show, but I really didn't think it would ever happen. We played that show. I remember meeting Brandon that night, and he was super nice. And, you know, he thanked us for playing, said he loved the song, asked me some questions about the band, you know, and, you know, if we'd be willing to tour and what our goals were and all this stuff. And it was just like a kind of a really small conversation, really, you know, probably the same conversation he had with every band, I imagine.
Yeah.
And I didn't really think anything of it too much. And I remember it had been like maybe like a month or two. And, we went back to California again, and we were hanging with him again, and I was just like, so, you know, what's up, dude? Have you talked to, and he used to talk to Brandon all the time, so I was like, has he said anything about us or anything? And he's like, dude, I'm actually working on that. Like, Tim was like in our court. Like, I told Brandon, you should sign Overcome. You should sign those guys. I think they'll be good, you know, And I was like, well, thank you so much. And he's like, oh, yeah, he's got so many things. He wants to do, like, every style of music. So he doesn't really want to focus. Like, he's got two hardcore bands, like, Unashamed Record. Like, our record came out. The Unashamed Record just came out. I know he's talking to this band, Strong Arm in Florida. And then he's got all these other bands. Like, he was talking about MXPX and, like, you know, Tim kind of knew what was going on in the world of, Tooth and Nail. And at that time, no joke, like, Brandon was signing a band a week, it seemed like, you know, and it was like,
yeah.
But it was all different types of genres. There was some grungy rock stuff, and there was shoegazing stuff, and there was, you know, stuff like Danielson and Roadside Money, and all these different genres, all this stuff. And so I don't think he didn't necessarily want to be, I remember, like, Tim at one point being that he doesn't want to be, it isn't a hardcore label. You know what I mean? It's not for hardcore bands. It's, you know, we got on this thing, we did this thing, and Ashamed of this thing, but I don't know how much he's going to do. I mean, he's got so many other bands, he can only do so much at a time, you know? And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And so I didn't really think about it that much, really. It didn't bother me, but there was always kind of like this thing, you know, a desire like any band would have to be on a label. And we had only been a band for like a year, you know, at the most. And so we were young and stupid, and we barely knew what we were doing. Like, honestly, like, I'm sure if I could go back and watch these shows, it would be laughable. But, I mean, none of us owned a tuner at all. We would just kind of tune to ourselves. And Reggie and Jason Oberfall kind of had this way of, like, this riff thing that they would play to tune themselves to each other.
Oh, my God.
And that's just what we would do. We would show up at shows, and he would find, like, a bass line for E, and then we would just tune our guitars that way. I mean, honestly, like, I don't think we had a tuner for 6 years. It was ridiculous. And
wow.
Yeah, I know. It was, we were sloppy, and, like, if you listen to our old recordings, you know, and other things, even our records that we made, they were kind of loose. They were kind of sloppy. They were kind of all over the place. And it was just kind of like what we did. Like, we didn't have a whole lot of, we didn't think about it that much, you know? But we just loved doing it. And it seemed like the hardcore punk thing to do. I don't know. But anyways, I remember coming home from work one day, and it was, you know, I'd always have these messages. And at this time, those messages were slowing down. So I wasn't getting that much stuff. Their demo tape had been out for a while, but it was usually always some type of show thing. And I'd come home, and there would always be a few messages on my machine. And a lot of times it was somebody from California wanting us to come out and play a show. Or in Arizona. We started playing a lot locally, too. And just at this club called the Nile Theater. And it was always, the cool thing is, we were like kind of the only kind of hardcore-ish band at the time here in Phoenix. There was some other, like, more... for lack of a better term, kind of like crust punk type stuff, and crust, you know, we would call it like crust core. There was a bigger scene of that, I think, than just regular hardcore stuff in Arizona. So we were kind of like the resident hardcore band. So anybody on tour, anybody, you know, they would ask us to play. So we were in this nice spot where we're like playing like every single heavy punk hardcore show in Arizona. We were just on the film. So anyhow, I clicked the message machine, and it, you know, it was whatever it was. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, I guess it was like, hey, Jason, this is Brandon Ebel. I met you at the show and everything. You did a song for us. And hey, I want you to give me a call. This is my phone number, da-da-da-da-da. He's like, and I want to, you know, I want to talk to you about what you think about possibly doing a record or, you know, or working with Tooth and Nail Records. And I remember just being like, oh, like this feeling came over me, like I have just won like the lottery. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I was elated. Like I just couldn't even believe what I just heard, you know? And, somewhere I think I still have that little cassette somewhere with that message. It'd be cool if I could find that and play that. But anyhow, I was blown away. And I couldn't get, you can't get a hold of any of your friends at that point in time. You just got to call them and leave them messages. So I was like, I called every single one of them. Half the time it's like their parents' house, you know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, is Jason there? No, he's not here right now. I need to talk to him right now. Where is he? You know, and parents kind of always knew where their kids were. So he'd be like, well, he's here. And I'm like, okay. And I just kind of took a collection of where everybody was. And I jumped in my car. And I'm just like hauling to get them. You know what I mean? To go meet them, to go find them, to tell them this what had just happened. And anyhow, that was I called Brandon like right away. And I was just like nervous as heck to call him. But I called him right away. And I remember we talked. And he, you know, asked me stuff about the band and asked how many songs we had and, you know, said that, you know, he kind of like just kind of explained out how it works, you know, like, hey, I'll put out your record for you. You know, I want to work with you guys. You know, I have this studio that NIV just recorded this record. It sounded really good. And I want you guys to kind of go in and record this album for me. And, I'm going to send you this contract. It'll be like this 3-record contract. And, you know, he just kind of explained it all out. And I remember just being like, this is unreal. I remember telling my parents and stuff that I was getting signed to this record label. And my dad really wanted me to go to college. And I was like, I'm not going to college because I'm going to be a rock star now. You know what I mean? Like, this is it. I'm hitting the road and I'm selling my everything I own and getting in a van. And this is going to be my life for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? I was, at that point in time, I was like, I think I was like 18 years old, and like that was it for me. Like, I just got signed to a record label. To me, that sounded every bit as much in my head as like it would if like, you know, Motley Crue got a record contract or something. It was like the same thing in my head. Like, I just talked to this record guy who's giving me a record. He's sending contracts in the mail. I have made it in music, you know, and it's been, it only took me a year. And, you know, I'll be, so the whole thing for me, like, honestly, like, I talked to Brandon a lot back then, and he was always super gracious and super cool, and, you know, I'm sure, you know, looking back at it, now I remember getting the contract, I remember having a lawyer read them. It was a guy at my church that was a lawyer, and he was really smart, and he read through it all, and he said, well, basically what this says is, you're not gonna make any money off your records, you know, like, there's going to be recording and duplication and, like, all of the cost to make this record, all of the sales of it will get paid. You know, you'll have to pay back all the advertising, you know, all the record making, you know, all the recording costs, and anything, any money spent at all on making a record will be paid back before you ever see anything, you know? And I remember thinking at the time, like, that sounds reasonable to me. Like, this guy is going to basically front all the money to put out this record. Like, if I was going to be a record label, I mean, I wouldn't just pay all this money and then give it out. Like, you have to get paid back first. So that to me, that made sense, you know? The only part I didn't like about it is the part where it was kind of like, but he said, and also, he's going to own all your songs. Like, these songs, you can perform them, you can write them, but he's going to own them. So once he owns these songs, like, you can't put them on anything without permission. You can't do anything with them without permission. You know, they can do whatever they want with them and make money off of them through other things if they want to, like, license it out to radio shows or commercials or any stuff, but you're not going to, you can't do anything with them. You know, like, basically, you can sell your records, but, and I remember thinking, like, that sucks, but I also remember thinking, like, what the heck do I want with, you know, I was kind of a realist in the sense that, like, these songs are what they are, but why would it, I can't imagine that I'm ever going to, you know, if he owns them, whatever, I just want them to be on a record for myself. And like, I can't imagine that there's anything else I could ever do with them, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, 25 years down the road now, that's true. You know what I mean? It's like, they're still there. They still exist. It's like, there's no way to really have ever done it. So anyways, I remember being, like, we all talked about it. I remember everybody's parents were involved in the thing, and they were all, you know, questioning everything. But we were all like, yeah, whatever. You know, we're going to do this, because we realized at that point, if you had a record, if you had T-shirts, if you had stuff, if you, you know, you could sell those. We were making money anyways. I mean, we were like, we would make 100 shirts, and we would go to California, and we'd sell all 100 of them, like, in 10 minutes. And then we'd make a new shirt, and we'd go out 2 weeks later, and we'd sell all of those in, like, 10 minutes. And then we'd make a new shirt, and then we'd sell all of those. I mean, you couldn't not sell stuff. You couldn't not make money. Everybody was so excited about it. So I was like, you know, we're going to go on tour. People are going to know who we are. We're going to sell stuff like this in every single state. You know, that was, like, my mindset. Like, we're going to go to New Mexico, and we're going to sell... We're going to play in front of 400 people, and we're going to sell 400 shirts and 400 CDs. You know what I mean? And it's like, that was like, because that's kind of how California worked, you know? So yeah. That was my mindset on the whole thing. So anyways, we signed the contract, and Brandon was super cool. We put out, we went into the studio, and I remember him calling me from the studio, asking how it was going and all this stuff. And when we sent it to him, like, he called me and said, I'm listening to it right now. It's great. I love it, you know? He put out, you know, our first record. I can't even think of what it is right now. Blessed Are the Persecuted. He put it out. And I remember there was, like, displays in Christian bookstores. There was ads for it in, like, Heaven's Metal magazine. And it was just, like, it was amazing. And so our next step was, the other thing was, is, like, if you're gonna sign the Tooth and Nail, you have to tour. Like, you have to. Like, it wasn't, like, you had to agree that you would go out and you would support this record and you would tour. So... the timing was right where he, you know, with the Strong Arm thing was happening as well. And I think Strong Arm's record came out really close to ours. And so, you know, he had started his own, I think Tim talked about it a lot, his own kind of like booking agency called Davdon at the time. And he was like, hey, you know, I'm going to set you up with this thing. You'll get contracts and guarantees and all this stuff. And, you know, I've listened to other people. I'm sure there was a lot of people like in a sense kind of taking our money or whatever, but I just look at it completely differently. I look at it as I had no opportunity, and now I had this opportunity. Like, people knew who we were. Like, and how much can you pay for that, really? You know, it's like, there are bands today that, you know, you hire a publicist and you hire all these things just so someone can listen to your music. You pay no matter what. And so, you know, for all of these kids and all these states and all across the United States now to know who we were, it was kind of like a priceless thing for me. So I remember thinking, like, I don't care if they're making money out this. I don't care if it may seem like there was nothing in my mind that thought that I was ever getting screwed. Like, everything in my mind was like, all I care about is going out there and singing these songs and getting the message of Christ out to as many like kids as I can, like as many people as I can. And if someone else is going to help me, you know, kind of like fund that and they can make money off of it too, whatever. I've never had any inkling that like we were not treated fairly or that I was upset that, you know, they weren't putting enough time into our band or any of that type of stuff. For me, it was just like my record's in all these places, it's all over the United States, the world actually. And my message and the words that I'm saying, which meant everything to me and that I really wanted to change people's lives with, like they were hearing this and it was widespread and money was just a means. It was really whoever made it, however it was spent, whoever was getting it, whatever, as long as I knew that the message of Christ was like going out and I had some way of making that happen through however, it was all that mattered to me. So honestly, like my Tooth and Nail experience till this day, I feel like indebted to, like almost indebted to Brandon and the whole experience, just because, I mean, the only reason I'm talking to you right now,
and
is because we did that tooth and nail thing. I mean, that's it. I mean, you know, I mean, we wouldn't have existed at all. We were an Arizona band. No one would have ever heard us. We could have done everything we could. There was no internet. There was nothing. But having that contract just, and even if we would have gotten on like another hardcore label or something, it would have been not even the same deal. You know, it would have been here today and gone tomorrow. Right. But so I feel like forever indebted to him. And anytime we ever spoke, it was always a positive experience. And I mean, honestly, I have like no criticism at all. In fact, you know, whenever we were supposed to do 3 records with them. And so we did, you know, The Blessed Are the Persecuted, then we did When Beauty Dies. That record sounds terrible, and there's a whole reason behind that. We can talk about that if you want to. But, we did that record, and then when that record was done, just because of the band was changing, we were all young, you know, we were all like, especially the other guys. I was the oldest in the band. I was like 18, and the other guys were like 15, 16 years old. They were kids, and they kind of came into this kind of Christian thing out of an excitement for what was going on, my enthusiasm for it, you know, and the excitement for the scene that was going on. But I don't know. I mean, I can tell you for sure that a lot of those guys, they didn't have a real relationship with Christ. They just didn't. They were kind of like sucked in, and you're young, and you get excited about something. It could be like anything, like straight edge or any type of political movement or something. When you're young, you just have this a passion for stuff that sometimes just doesn't last. And we got through tour, which was amazing, and we became like best friends with Strong Arm and all that stuff. And when we got back, and there was things going on in the other guys' lives, and things that I would look at it and I would think, you know, all I cared about was preaching the gospel. I was definitely a believer, and I still am. And everything to me was like, I want this band to be a ministry. And I truly did care, like, about the lives of people and about how they were living and about sin and about living for Christ and walking in the Spirit and all these things. Like, they weren't just cliche terms. Like, that really meant something to me. Like, I wanted people to change and follow Christ. And then I looked at my own band, and I realized that it was kind of only me. Like, the other guys in the band, like, they, you know, would profess a form of Christianity, I think mostly because they were in this band, but they didn't live it. And I could see it kind of as they were getting older, and as new things and new opportunities for life were coming into their life, that they were compromising their faith. And so I remember having, by no means was I wanting to end the band, because it was like my life, you know. It was like, I loved it. I promoted it. I made the shirts. I designed it. I wrote the songs. Reggie helped me write songs too, but like, it was me. It was my identity, really. You know what I mean? It was like overcome. And like, we had achieved like this goal of being on a label, and I did not want to lose that. But I also didn't want to be a hypocrite. So it was like, I remember there was just some things even happening after shows and things that I remember that, you know, just the idea of being above reproach and that we had this message, and then people seeing us and that not being the case just really didn't sit well with me. Like, it just didn't, like, everything about that bothered me. And so I remember one night after practice, like, we all kind of got in our van and we had this long discussion, like, hey, you know, I would just tell him, like, I see how you're living, and I see the stuff that your decisions you're making and this. And I said, it's not consistent with like our message. And so, you know, they all, in one night, the band would disband. It was me sitting there, and I'm like, okay, we had just put out When Beauty Dies, and my entire life, everything I wanted to do was like gone, because I couldn't compromise my faith. Like, I couldn't do that. That was the one thing I couldn't do and keep this band going, you know?
Yeah.
So at one point I was super bummed, and the other point I was super relieved. And I went that night, I determined, you know what, I'm going to rebuild this band. I'm going to. And I'm going to do it with like Christian guys, and we're going to make this happen. And And the crazy thing is the pattern was the same for like the next like 5 years. It was like guys that said they were Christians would come in and then they weren't, and then this and then and they weren't. And it was just kind of a struggle to keep it legit, you know? And, but anyway,
yeah.
The reason why this ties the tooth and nail is, I remember Brandon calling me, or I called Brandon, because, you know, whatever. And he was like, you know, we're going to set up this next tour, you know, for When Do You Die. We got a tour of the record. And I was like, dude, I have a problem. And he's like, what? And I was like, well, it's only me right now. Like, the whole band quit. And he's like, what? And I'm like, well, they didn't quit. It's just that I kind of explained all this out to him. And I remember, like, he was cool about, you know, me wanting to be legit with it. But at the same time, he was like, well, you guys need to tour this record. You know what I mean? Can you stay together and go on tour? You know what I mean? And because they're contractually obligated. You know what I mean? Like, these guys signed a contract. Like, you have a contract. You agree that you have to tour this record, you know? And so I was like, yeah, I know, but, you know, we can't. Like, I'm not gonna do it with guys that, I'm not going to sing these songs and, you know, whatever. Anyhow, I told him, I'm like, I'm going to rebuild the band, okay? And we will fulfill the, we'll do the tour. I'm going to get members, you know, but you got to give me like 6 months or whatever. And he's like, okay, that's fine. I'll give you the time, you know, rebuild the band. And so I did. I started like rebuilding the band. We started playing again, everything. And then in the middle of that, I got a letter from Tooth and Nail just resolving us of our contract. It was just basically like this letter like, hey, you guys, it was like this legal letter, like that we were void of contract. We didn't fulfill the duties of our contract, and they weren't going to take any type of legal action or anything against us or anything like that, but that we were basically void of our contract and that we wouldn't be doing like a third record with them. And that was like, to me, was like, and again, no fault on Brandon's fault. Like, of course, you know, we were stupid and young and he, you know, whatever. I get it from his standpoint, but for me, it was devastating. Like, I remember just being like, I was doing all this work and I really did want to honor that contract. And I really didn't want to be off the label. I wanted to make another record, you know? It was like,
yeah.
And I remember just being crushed by that. Like, that was like, but I knew that I was doing the right thing at the same time. Like, I was crushed by it, but I knew I didn't want to, like, compromise my faith to keep something going. And so that was kind of like the end of the Tooth and Nail thing. But, you know, that's kind of a long answer to your question of, like, they were legit to me. Like, and still to this day, like, I feel indebted to Brandon and the work that he did for us. And I think that we were actually friends. You know, I remember just talking to him a long time ago whenever he was coming up with the name Solid State. He would call me and be like, hey, I'm thinking about, you know, I want to do more hardcore bands, but I don't want Tooth and Nail to be a hardcore label. So, you know, I'm thinking about starting like a hardcore label. Do you think that that's dumb or whatever? I'm like, no, I think that's cool, you know, and I get it. And I mean, you can do more and have, you know, you can have like an actual metal hardcore label. And he's like, yeah. He's like, I'm thinking about calling it Solid State, and, you know, we could put your next record out on that. And I just remember being really excited about all that stuff. And being, like, super, like being, like, a part of, like, another new cool thing. You know, there was, like, Tooth and Nail. And
yeah.
We're going to be one of the first two Solid State, you know. And, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I think One of you guys might have ended up getting a Solid State label at one point, but I can't remember. But I just remember being like, okay, cool. Now I'm going to be a part of this next new chapter, you know, and how cool, what awesome this was. And then just being super bummed when it didn't happen. So, but other than that, like, I loved it. I mean, I would not, that is one thing going back, I would not change of anything. I would still have signed that contract and done all of that the same.
sounds like just kind of keeping the band together is what ultimately led to the band breaking up. Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
No.
Our last like kind of group that we had in the band with Ethan Pajak on drums and Nick Westby on guitar and BJ on guitar and this guy named Matt on bass. We were all solid Christian guys. You know, I'm not sure that most of them are now. You know, I can say that probably three of us are, you know, but at the time we really were, you know, you know, whenever Face Down, we were writing, we had all these new songs and I was super excited about them. Like I loved the first part of Overcome and that all of that and those dudes and what we did like has such a special place in my heart. But then kind of the second main part of Overcome, that the Immortal Till the Work Is Done era and all that stuff, like I kind of have the same feeling for them. Like there was no one band was better than the other or one version was better than the other. Like both were very significant to me and all of those guys I still love like very much. But that band at the time was like, we were cranking and like we all loved what we were doing and we were playing awesome shows and we did that thing with Life Sentence Records, which was really cool. That was back with the old band though, but, we were playing with like all the secular bands now in California. Like we were playing with 18 Visions and Throwdown and Adamantium and I don't know. There was Counterpunch and there was like or Countervail, I think they were called. And Counterpunch was another old Arizona band. But we had kind of broken into like the secular hardcore scene. We were playing with Fall Silent and all these other shows. They were from Reno, Nevada, and it was really cool because we were like this Christian band that finally, like all the spiritual hardcore bands, their goal was to kind of like not just play spiritual and hardcore shows, you know, even though those were fun. But the idea is to, and like you felt more legit in one sense. And then the other sense was, that you really did want to kind of be like the Billy Graham of the hardcore world. You know what I mean? Get your message out there and just preach the gospel to people that actually you weren't just preaching to the choir, you know? And, we were able to do that. And so for years, that part of Overcome was like a lot more secular stuff, playing secular shows than playing the Christian ones. And so that was always like really good. And, you know, Face Down Records came along. And Jason Dunn has been a part of the scene forever. And he even came to the studio when we recorded our first, you know, Blessed Are the Persecuted record. And he was in bands back then. And he used to write me letters. He was in this band called Built to Last. And he would, you know, be doing shows. And he was always like a vibrant guy in the scene. You know, mm-hmm. He was always sending letters and always talking to people and setting up shows. And I remember when he started his record label, you know, Face Down. And he contacted us because he knew we were writing new music, and he just from us talking, he knew that we weren't on Tooth and Nail anymore. And he was like, hey, you know, I want to put out something, you know, like an EP. You know, what do you guys got? And I said, we got like six songs. Said, let's do an EP. You know, so we did. We did that with him, and that was cool. And then we were writing our new album, the Immortal record, and we had agreed with him. Like I told him, I said, you know, we're gonna do this record with you. And he was like, really? And he was like super stoked because his label was just getting started, you know? And it was just, you know, and for him, I think, you know, nothing necessarily like better about us or anything, but for him, at least we were established. We had been around for like 5 years. You know, we were on Tooth and Nail. People knew who we were. If we went to Cornerstone or whatever, people knew who we were, you know, and there was like a name.
Right.
Like the equity in the name was there, you know, and so I remember just being like, hey, this is going to help us out a ton. It's going to help you out a ton. I think this is what God wants us to do. It is like the right thing, you know. And I remember going to Cornerstone, and we had already recorded Immortal Till the Work Is Done, and I think I had been playing it for some people and stuff. It hadn't come out yet, and we were at Cornerstone, and Brandon like got a hold of me. And he was like, hey, because we played Cornerstone like that night before, and it just went off. You know, it was crazy. There's 4,000 people in the tent, the underground tent, and it was, and I think he saw that, like, you know, the band definitely did rebuild, and that we had put out an EP, and we had, you know, he had heard, you know, word of, like, this new record that was being made. And Brandon came up to me and was like, hey, what do I have to do for you to, like, allow me to put out your guys' new record? I want to re-sign you guys. I know that, you know. And I was, you know, I thought that was cool. And I remember just talking to him, but I told him, I said, you know, the same reason why you got rid of us, because I couldn't continue on, you know, in good faith, like, with that other band, is the same reason why I can't do the, like, I knew, like, if we had done our third record on Tooth and Nail, like, that would have been, Tooth and Nail, that, it was huge at that time. I mean,
yeah,
way bigger than they were, like, when we started. I mean, they had, like, half the tent at Cornerstone, you know what I mean? Like, everybody else had their little booths. They, like, owned the place, and, like, they had a Tooth and Nail stage, and, like, Tooth and Nail at that point was, like, at its pinnacle, and, like, you know, the exposure was unreal, you know, and, but I told him, I said, you know, as much as I would love to do a record with Tooth and Nail, because I think that would just be huge, I was like, I'm not going to compromise my word to my friend.
You know,
I already told him we were going to do it with him, and that's that. Like, I'm, you know, just, I just don't compromise what I say and what I do. Like, I want to be legit, you know? And so, and, you know, I realized too, at the end of the day, like, all that matters to me is that my reputation, as far as being, like, a real believer and, like, somebody that, like, wants to honor God, is intact. And, like, I didn't want to step on people or do whatever's best for the band to compromise any of that, ever. And so I just remember telling him, like, man, like, everything in me was like, oh, my gosh, this is what you should do. You know what I mean? Like, oh, my whole, like, flesh side was like, this is it. You know, do your record here. You know, let him put it out. But everything else, like, everything, you know, the actual heart of me was like, I don't care about the exposure, and I don't care about all of that stuff. And the kind of more godly wisdom side of me is like, you know, the tent's not going to get any bigger. You know, Cornerstone, 4,000 people or whatever, it's going to stay the same. But you can compromise here, and that would be, you know, that would ruin your integrity, and then what? You know, and so I remember just being like, you know, I'm committed to do this record with Face Down Records. And I just remember him being like, he has no distribution. You know, he has no, you know, it's a cool label, people like it, but it's not going to get anywhere. It's not going to, you know, you're going to make this record, you have all these songs, like, it's not going to get anywhere. It's not going to be in any stores. You know, and, like, again, there was no internet or anything back then, you know. He's like, so
yeah,
all these people that you played for last night are singing your old songs. They're not going to get your new, and I said, they'll get it, because, you know, word of mouth and through, you know, we're going to tour and we're going to get it out there anyhow. He was right in a lot of senses, but at the same time, it's like, I would not compromise, like, any of that stuff. And none of the band, like, all of the band, they were like, no, we're sticking with Jason Dunn. We're sticking with him. We're sticking with Face Down, because we want to, you know, be legit. So we did. We put that record out with him. We went on tour with Figure Four and stuff. And that, this is the, so the real reason why Overcome broke up was, on that tour, like, after about 6 years of that, I was 21 years old, 22. And every night, I was, like, coughing up blood at the end of the shows. Or just, like, my voice, that whole tour, like, I remember just sucking on throat lozenges and buying, like, throat spray and, like, everything I could do. And every night was, like, a literal, like, hell trying to get through singing those songs. And I realized, like, I can't. If that kind of started happening, you know, like, around 1999 to 2000, like, my throat just wasn't, I don't know if maybe I just sing wrong or whatever. I know some people, you know, they say there's a technique to yelling so you could do it for the rest of your life, but I didn't know that technique. And it was literally, like, messing me up. Like, in the whole tour, like, I struggled and struggled and struggled and struggled. And when we got home, I realized, like, I was not going to be able to do this anymore. Like physically was not able, but I was not wanting to, like, stop music. And so, that's what killed Overcome. Really, it was like, and so I started Indwelling just playing guitar, and it was pretty much all the Overcome guys, you know, plus a friend of mine that, could growl, you know, and play bass. Yeah. So, and then over time, it, you know, the other guys, because it didn't have the, kind of the equity behind the name and all the stuff, the other guys just kind of like, that were in Overcome just kind of like dropped out, you know, so it was just me and the drummer and a bass player, and we just kind of left it like that. So that's what killed Overcome, was my inability to keep singing.
Which explains why, when the band reformed, you played guitar and Thomas took over vocal duties.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. I mean, even when we started that back up again, like, I met a friend, the drummer of that band, John Strunk, and I met him, and he was just an incredible drummer, this kid. And we just, I started jamming with him just so he could play drums. And I realized just how good he was. You know, we were like, you know, jamming in this warehouse, and we just started writing songs. And so I thought, this is cool, you know. And so I was like, well, maybe, you know, we'll just, I don't, whenever I start doing anything musical, it, like, it can't just be jamming in a room. It has to, like, go somewhere. And so I started seeing opportunity, you know, like, hey, you know. And so we actually, the new Overcome phase was like, it was never going to be, but we started writing songs, and I got that Thomas, who was the singer for Indwelling, you know, once he heard that we were starting another band, he's like, I want it, you know what I mean? So I was like, all right. And we didn't know where he was going to be. We had him, me on guitar. We didn't know if he was going to play bass or what. And we just kind of, we were looking for a band name and all this stuff. And then I was like, you know what? What if we just, you know, call it Overcome, because there was so much equity in the name, you know what I mean? I'm like, I'm 35 years old, I could play, you know, we could start a new band, but, like, no one's going to care, you know, no one's going to care at all. So it's like, if we use that name, at least people will care, and I'm still writing the songs, and, you know, you were the singer for Indwelling, so you're kind of connected in that sense, and you know, you kind of look through the corridor of time, you see all these other bands that were able to just kind of change singers, you know?
Yeah.
Keep going, like, you know, Zayo, for instance, you know, they were able to switch singers out and, from time to time. And then other bands, there's so many bands that, like, they were just kind of, and I'm like, well, you know, it's hardcore, you know, what, and Thomas actually kind of sounded like me too. So, we just kind of thought that would be a good idea. And, you know, it definitely allowed us to put out a couple of records, but I don't know that it was that great of an idea. Like, I wish I would have kind of gone back with the level of playing that we were doing. Like, if I could go back, I probably would have just either come up with a new name and just done whatever we did, or I would have tried to sing on those records, you know, and just play just not very much, you know? I don't know. Is what it is.
It's interesting. I really like both those records, especially the first one, the full length, Sabotage. I remember at the time I was writing music reviews when it came out, and that was one of those records I went around the internet to see what other people were saying, and it seemed like people did not, maybe not that they didn't get it, but that heavy music had, like, changed and become this thing, and it was like that record was like just the next Overcome record that would have come out after Immortal, and it sounded in that vein. And I just remember being like, people just don't get it, and just being very old guy about it, being like, no, this sounds like old school hardcore.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when I wrote that thing, I wrote it with the mentality, like I even did part twos of songs. You know what I mean? Like I was like,
yeah,
like I wanted it to be Immortal Part Two. Like I wanted it to be like this. I wanted it to sound like that. I wanted it to be like, this is the next progression, exactly of what Overcome would have been. And I wanted that feel, and I wanted that the same theme. I kind of continued this thing on, and I kind of envisioned that like this would be really received well by people, you know. But I was totally jaded in the sense that like the generation gap with hardcore and stuff like that is huge. And then everything that was out there was so like kind of overdone, and all of the breakdowns in the songs and all the drum replacing and all the, you know, the reamping and all the stuff and all the stuff that was going on. We didn't do any of that. Like we made that record the same way we made all our other ones. We just set up in a studio and busted it out, and what you heard on there were our actual drums and our actual guitars and our actual bass. When the reviews started, and I was so happy with it, I was like, this sounds like, you know, I was like, this is it, man. This is like, we created something 10 years later that sounds like it was 2 years later, you know?
Yeah.
And then I remember reading the first couple of reviews that came out, and people just hated it, you know? And I was like, whoa, like I was totally like, you know, I think that's just like the old guy in me. Like, I just wasn't keeping up with what was happening in the scene, and especially in like the Christian scene. You know what I mean? Like the Christian
music
metalcore thing. Like, if you listen to like the secular bands, and you listen to like Converge or any of these bands that have been around for a long time, their records still kind of make things the same way they used to. You know, and the production is definitely better, but it's not over the top, you know, it's not all in place, and it's not all metalcore-y sounding. And I just honestly never really liked that sound. And so, it's like, it surprised me. It was a real bummer to me that so many people just didn't accept it very well.
Most recently, while the second phase of Overcome was winding down, you started this project called Some Dark Hollow, doing a kind of country bluegrass. How'd you get started doing that?
Yeah, so you know, I'm 43 years old, and but basically, I kind of like I grew up in Arizona for one thing, so I grew up in the West, and I kind of grew up as a kid. My dad owned a body shop, and his grandfather before him owned my grandfather owned a body shop before that. And they were all kind of old school country guys. You know, like my grandfather, you go to his house, it was like Oak Ridge Boys, 8-tracks, and you know, I as a kid just watching Hee Haw and watching, you know, all this kind of the Johnny Cash and the Waylon Jennings and the Merle Haggard and Ronnie Mills, have all these old country stuff. I was like in my head. I knew all these songs when I was a kid. I grew up through all that, and I liked it then too. You know, I liked that as a kid. I used to watch that stuff, and then I got, you know, I think just the angst in me turned me into a metalhead and kind of went that direction. But I've always been kind of a love for like almost all kinds of music, you know? But,
yeah.
But I definitely, and still do, I still love heavy music. Like, believe it or not, I still listen to a lot of metal. I still listen to a lot of hardcore. I still love that style of music. And I still like playing it and listening to it and everything. But I also, I love like singing, like singer-songwriter type stuff. I love the old outlaw country stuff. I love, I think the mentality behind it's the same. I think that there's a lot of like just realness in the music. Like none of the like new school country stuff. Like I literally look at like all the metalcore stuff that we have now. That's that everybody hears that compared all our records to. Like I look at that as like new school country. Like that's out on the radio. You know what I mean? Like that's the same to me. Like those, and so I don't get it. You know what I mean? I don't get it at all. But it's like so yeah. I mean I you know, I'm a worship leader for a church in Phoenix. I have a part-time job doing that. So I like to sing and I like to play guitar and I like writing songs. And, it was kind of a natural thing. Like me and some friends just started writing songs in the living room one time. Like we were just kind of playing through Avett Brothers tunes and playing through, old school country songs. And it's fun to just get your guitars out and you play these songs, you know? And you were singing together, and we're harmonizing together, and we're playing these old school country songs. And next thing you know, we've got like 10 or 12 of them. And then, you know, I start writing songs, and he starts writing songs, and we're all just like sharing songs. And it just became this natural thing. And I remember one time, like 6 years ago, like calling up Ethan, like the Overcome drummer. We were still friends. He still lives here in Phoenix. And like, hey, I got this bunch of songs. Like, it's just, you know, singer songwritery, bluegrassy, old school country type stuff. And I just wanted to see if you'd come over. I just want to kind of like put some drums to it and just kind of see what it sounds like. And so he came over one day and, you know, some other friends came over and I had this guy that played bass and he showed up and Thomas played guitar and like he showed up. Like we were all just like musical buddies, you know?
Yeah.
And they all kind of showed up. We just started. We like spent like 6 hours at my house one day just like just playing music, just like writing songs, putting chords progressions together and playing along. And it was just a lot of fun. And then there's always that just drive in me that like, I can't ever just play music with friends. You know what I mean? It's like, this has to go somewhere. So in my head, I'm like, okay, that's it. I'm not content with doing this in my living room. I want to book shows, you know what I mean? Like, this is cool. Yeah. People should hear this, you know what I mean? Like, let's not just leave this here. And so, inevitably, when I start doing that, people drop out because of the commitment to it, you know? And now, you know, we were like a 6-person band, and now we're 4, you know? And we've been that for a while. But it just kind of started, like, just us playing some songs, playing some music that we grew up on, playing stuff that we liked. You know, it's not by any means like any type of like we don't have like any ministry like goal behind it or anything like that. But because I'm a believer and because of God is the most important thing in my life, when I write these songs, there's kind of like this redemptive theme to everything, you know? And so the other guys are believers as well in the band, but we're, you know, we just play locally throughout, you know, all the kind of Arizona clubs and stuff like that. We don't have any goals of touring or any of that stuff. I mean, we all have families and our jobs. And literally at this point, you know, there's always been, you know, there's dudes that are into golf. And there's guys that, you know, have whatever their hobby is, you know. And for us, we're kind of like old guys that have always, our hobby has always been music. And so we have now this kind of like this outlet and this way to be able to write and record and do all the things that we used to love doing and play and you know, in the last 7, I've done this 7 years now. So this is almost as long as I did Overcome for. So, we have 2 vinyl records out and honestly, like we've played like a ton of awesome, awesome shows here in Phoenix and all the stuff. And again, the scene here is small, so there's not a lot of bands like us. So when the touring bands come through, we get to play them, and we get to play a lot of cool festivals, and I don't know. It just got started in the living room one day, and then I decided we wanted to make, you know, book a show, and then once you play one, the promoter likes you, and then they ask you to play another one, and then another one, And next thing you know, it's 7 years down the road, and you're still doing it, you know? And it just...
Yeah.
It just starts going.
And take me far away.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.